I have a timer set for 20 minutes. So if you hear an alarm, that's just we're on our last question. And we'll stop soon after that. I have been at College Park Church for 20 years, 21 years. So I'm a longtime member. A lot of faces I recognize, a lot that I don't. The church is constantly changing. This morning as I was thinking about this, so I'm going to tell you a little bit about what Life Centers is. I'm going to tell you what abortion is and isn't. I'm going to share some stories with you. And then I had some questions that I was given ahead of time, but I want to open up time for questions because we had lots of questions last night when I did this. And then I think from there we go to discussion questions and that type of thing. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the why. So Life Centers, I came on staff with Life Centers 8 years ago, and one of the things we did was the whole branding refresh and all of that, and that's painful if you've ever gone through that, but they asked me, can you summarize what Life Centers is in core values rather than like this long statement of things? And so I came up with four core values to summarize what Life Centers core values are. And number one was everyone has value. Number two was relationships matter. Number three was we believe in second chances. And number four was the Bible is authoritative in what it says about us and God. And so the why is that we believe that every person is made in the image of God. Every person matters to God. God has a plan for every person, and this includes children that are not yet born. We are also called in Scripture to love our neighbors and to help the least of these, the marginalized, the oppressed, and those without a voice. So it is a calling that we're given from Scripture. So how does Life Centers live this out? Well, Life Centers is not a political organization. It isn't even really a social organization. It's a ministry. So we have six pregnancy resource centers. You may have heard of our old name, the Crisis Pregnancy Centers, but we have six pregnancy resources around the Indianapolis area. So there's one at 30th and Lafayette, one at 10th and Arlington, one at 32nd Meridian, one in Southern Plaza on the south side. We have one in Noblesville across from the hospital, and one on Main Street in Lebanon. And at these centers, we're doing practical ministry. So we are doing things like pregnancy tests. We do ultrasounds. We do verification of pregnancy and referrals. So she can come into our center, get an official verification of pregnancy, go to a WIC office and get support that way. Our referral list is 8 pages front and back, single spaced, of just different referrals. We have ins in all sorts of services. So we're able to help meet her needs. I remember one time I got a call, and usually they don't come in this form. Usually it's like, I've got these six needs, and I that's why I'm leaning towards abortion. That's why I'm considering abortion. But this one young lady gave me a direct challenge. She says, I have 8 problems, and if they're not solved by Friday, I have an abortion scheduled. And it was very blunt, but I said, okay, challenge accepted. And so by Thursday, I was able to call her and tell her of all the things that were able, and she didn't get an abortion. But that a lot of times, those are the unspoken needs that are. So we have been sort of sold on what abortion is, and it isn't this, okay? So maybe you've heard that abortion is a woman's right, it's a power, that it's some sort of power move that's done by a woman. In actuality, it isn't. Most of what we see is that young ladies are choosing abortion because they feel they have no other option. 75% of women, this was done by a group called the Guttmacher Institute. They're attached to Planned Parenthood. They're the research arm. 75% of women who had an abortion said that finances played a key component in it. They said if they would have been able to feel like they could afford their baby, they wouldn't have chosen abortion. 80% of them say if the man or the significant other attached to it would have been supportive, they wouldn't have chosen abortion. What we see in the centers is more than half of the abortions are coerced, meaning there's somebody putting pressure on them to have this abortion, either a boyfriend or a family member. A lot of times parents will put pressure if they still have some role in that. We've seen employers put pressure to have an abortion. You're gonna lose your job if you take pregnancy sick leave. We've even seen schools pull back scholarships and things like that. So there is this pressure, this outside pressure that's put on these young ladies. And sometimes one of the things that surprised me is when I got involved in the ministry is I thought somebody who's had a baby, who has children, would never choose abortion. And that's just not true. That financial pressure that's put on them, oftentimes we'll see a mother who has two children and she's about to have her third. And she says, I will be taking food, I'll be taking resources away. And so she thinks the loving thing to do is to abort her third child rather than have it for the welfare of her two other children. So abortion isn't a power move. It's not a right. It's not empowering. For those who've gone through it, they can tell you that. A third of our staff at Life Centers is post-abortive themselves. They're the most passionate against abortion. And so what we see is abortion is more common in marginalized and poorer communities. It's actually marketed and targeted to inner cities. That's where they do all their marketing and so forth for it. So it isn't something that you see powerful people or even in the suburbs embracing in large numbers. But it is frequent. The other lie is that abortion is rare. The truth is, in the U.S., 1 in 5 women age 30 and up have had an abortion. So it is common. You get a group, and it's inside the church, outside the church. And again, where there's no condemnation from us for that. We feel that women that have had an abortion are just as much a victim as the child. But if you had a group in a church of, let's say there was 200 women, you've got probably 50 abortions in that group, right? So it is something that is common. And we see it because the numbers are 1 in 5 age 30, but once you get older, it's actually 1 in 4 age 45 and up have had an abortion. Also, when you look at the total number of abortions, oftentimes we get tied into like what happens in the U.S. or what happens in our area. But abortion has been exported over the last several years across the world. So now abortion is very common across the world. So I'm going to give you two numbers that you can look these up if you don't believe me. But the first number is, what's the total number of deaths of all causes, all-cause mortality in the world? So that number is 58 million for 2019. So that's all causes. So that's heart attacks, strokes, cancer, suicide, war, accidents, all of those viruses, all those thrown together, is 58 million. Now the Guttmacher Institute, again, is the leading researcher on abortion. They estimated the number of abortions in 2019 at 73 million. So more than all other cause mortalities is abortions. I've seen a number of countries that didn't have abortion in the last 10 years who now have thriving abortion businesses. And in some countries, it's used as a form of birth control. And so it is pervasive. It's not rare. It's not, there used to be the thing, rare and safe. Rare, safe, and legal, I think, was what they pushed for. I'm not going to talk about all the safety issues, but there are safety issues with that. So at our centers, what do we do? our goal is to help take the pressure off of them. So we talked about that 75% of women who say that finances played a part in it. So we give away diapers, wipes, clothing, formula when we can get it, pack and plays. We have up to size T5, some T6 in our centers. And so we see this mother in her 8th month of pregnancy. We give her a bunch of stuff so she can take the baby, so she doesn't take a naked baby home from the hospital, basically, and that she has some of that stuff. And then every 3 months she can come back, and that's part of developing a relationship with her. We're trying to lay a foundation that can support the weight of the gospel in each of these situations. And that foundation is always built with love and compassion and understanding. The number one comment we get is, they didn't judge me. They come in thinking like we're gonna judge them or something, but that's the number one comment we get. We have thank you cards that we get occasionally or on our website. So we're just trying to meet all these needs. We use those referrals. We do peer counseling. We do post-abortive counseling. So we have post-abortive counseling services for those who've had an abortion. So we're just trying to meet all of those needs so that she can make the decision that she wants to make, which is most of the time is to carry this baby and to have a baby, not to choose abortion. One example, I'm gonna share a couple of stories. So when I first started at Life Centers, we had this 16-year-old girl who'd come in. Now, a lot of people think our clients are all young, but our average client age is probably around 26, 27. And in Indiana, there were more abortions for women 40 and up than there were for 17 and under. So the idea that it's a bunch of like 12 or 13-year-olds or 16-year-olds or something is not the case. Abortion is being chosen by all ages, but so the 16-year-old girl was there, and she was at our downtown center, and her parents were insisting that she get an abortion. She didn't want an abortion, but her parents were insisting, and her dad was he got physically shoved one of our center staff, and so they called me down to intimidate him. Obviously, that was going to work. Right. So I work on a staff. There's three guys and 26 women. So we have women counseling women in the centers. But I came down. It was better that I got hit than somebody else. So I came down, and he must have worked because he dropped him off. And no, they had come back for an ultrasound, and she went in there with her mother and her grandmother, and the dad dropped him off and took off. And so I was just down there working on my computer, but they're in their ultrasound room, and I hear a gasp, it's a baby. And that was the first time that they realized that. Ultrasounds are highly effective. We do a lot of those. And 80% of the time when somebody gets an ultrasound, they don't get an abortion, even if they have one scheduled. 55% of the time, if they'll just come to our center and talk to us, they won't, even if they have an abortion scheduled, they won't get an abortion. And so her, at that point, that was her mother that said that. Her mother, we found out later, had an abortion when she was 16. So this was a cycle that was being passed down. But from that point on, that father didn't have a chance to object. They were having this baby. They were excited about it. We threw a baby shower for him, I think. And we got to see pictures of the baby, and it was wonderful. Just last week, we threw another baby shower. There was a young lady who was pregnant, and she was moving, and she had all her stuff, her baby stuff in the car, and it all got stolen in one thing. And so I called up a church, and I said, how quick can you put together a baby shower? In less than a week, they put together a baby shower and celebrated life. That's a big component. A lot of communities don't celebrate life. And then it was a month ago, this grandmother came into our Noblesville Center, and she was trembling, and she gave us like $100 and a thank you note. And basically her story was she didn't know that her daughter was pregnant, and she was seeking different places considering an abortion and changed her mind when she came into one of our centers. And she never would have known, right? So she brought in a picture of her grandchild and said, thank you. Thank you for that. And these are the great things that we get to see on a regular basis. Reminds me of a story I read last week in the Washington Post. It was about, her name is Margaret Kohler. So life as an only child for Margaret Kohler was lonely. I had to go outside to find friends to play with, said Kohler. I definitely wished I had siblings. So more than just a brother or sister, she longed for a large family. So when the time came for her to start her own brood, she went with more is more mentality. Kohler and her late husband, William, who also came from a small family, had 11 children. And those 11 children had 56 grandchildren. And on September 19th, the 101st great-grandchild came about. And so there was a picture of her with her 101st grandchild. And they asked her for a quote, and her quote was, "It's terrific." So, right, simple and to the point. But the idea that we have to remember is that life begets life, and that each abortion is not just tragedy for that child and for that mother, but it cuts off a whole branch, right? And so a couple of questions that I was asked was, how can we defend the sanctity of life and our pro-life views when conversing with friends and family? And the first thing I'd say is to educate yourself, right? There's lots of good resources where you can understand what abortion is and isn't. So we talked a little bit about that power dynamic. Understand the edge cases. Those are being thrown out a lot. So it's like, well, what about this and what about this? And those edge cases, when you add them all together, are less than 2%, really less than 1% when you add all those together. And understand what they are, but still stand on your principles, even in edge cases, right? So no matter how awful the father is, that baby that's there is still an image bearer of God. It's still something valued by God. It's still valuable and worthy. There was an argument called the SLED argument. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of this, but you could look that up. I don't have time to go through it this morning, but it has to do with size, level of development, environment, and degree of dependency. And those are the four aspects that people use to dehumanize a baby that's in the womb. They say it's too small, it's not developed, it's inside the mother's womb. And if you think about each of those arguments individually, it doesn't negate human life. And then no resources like life centers, no places where women that you come in contact with, or if you're in a discussion with somebody that you can say, like, well, have you ever been to a life center? Have you ever heard of those? Because a lot of times arguments are made like they're going to die and there's no, you know, they're not going to have any resources. And that's just not true. The second thing I'd say is don't argue. I think most of us have learned that Facebook isn't the place to settle theological ideas or philosophies, but the way that we're able to speak into these women's life is because we've laid that foundation. So if you're going to get into a discussion, make sure that you're compassionate and consistent and that this is somebody who will listen to what you say. Those are my short answers to that question. And then the other question was, now that Roe v. Wade is overturned, how can we help? Number one is to pray. Sometimes we put that as the last thing that we do, but I would say pray. Another way is just to tour a center. All right, there was my, just to tour a center. So. We used to do short-term mission trips. We changed them to vision trips because the point is for the person to get a vision for what's happening. And so I do this all week long. I'm taking people through on a tour of the center so that they can see what's available. And so if they come into contact, they can say, you know, I know of a place, I'll go there with you, and we can help you with that. Donate old items. So we give away all this stuff, and we don't have a line item for it. We just give it away based on donations. So if it doesn't have a hole or a severe stain in it, you know, we'll take those items and use them and give them away. You can also have your eyes open and be ready to befriend vulnerable women. They're all around you. And I know sometimes we think to ourselves, like, I just don't have time for this, or this isn't, you know, I've got to deal with me, self-care, or whatever term we're using. But there are lots of people that are vulnerable, and you think they're not, but they are. It's amazing what the stress of an unintended pregnancy will do to somebody. Like, a lot of times theology goes out the window and they make a rash decision. And so those are just my suggestions to those questions. Can I take a couple of questions if people have questions? So I'm going to cut it off there as far as my presentation. Yes? Maybe the Noblesville one. I haven't mapped it out, but it's either the Noblesville one or maybe the West one. So.
And then when you say donations, clearly clothing, baby items, but do you take like toys in it for age?
Yeah. So on our website we have a list of everything, but we do give away, like, every 3 months we give them at least one toy and one book. Socks, clothing, onesies, whatever else we can give them, pack and place. Yes? It's lifecenters.com. So, yeah, we're not a for-profit, but .com just works better for us. Oh, sorry. That's a great question. So she asked, for the women who choose to give birth, do they, most of them choose adoption, or do they choose parenting? And the answer is actually parenting. So there's a couple, there's a lot of like false things that are going out, but one of them is there's going to be this flood of unwanted babies. And I'll give a brief sort of explanation of what happened. So 9 out of 10 women that have in our centers that have decided that they are going to have an abortion, then they change their mind because of an interaction with us, choose to parent. They don't choose adoption. And one way to think of it is just on a short-term selfishness scale. So I'm not condemning, I'm just using selfishness as a measure, because we all suffer from that at some point. So if you're only thinking about yourself, right, that allows you to do an abortion, right? You're not, when you choose abortion, you're not choosing what's best for the child. You're choosing, this is what I think is best for me. You're being, in essence, selfish. When you choose to parent, that is less selfish. And in the long term, it's a lot less selfish, with kids. You're a lot less self-centered. But in the short term, actually the most selfless thing you can do is to give birth to a child and have those natural connections to that child, and to choose what's best for the child rather than what your heart longing may be, and that is adoption. And so a lot of times we're able to move a woman from I'm only thinking about myself to now I'm thinking about my child and I'm going to parent, but not all the way to adoption. And that was something that if you're in it, you notice, but from the outside, it may not make a lot of sense. So short answer is 9 out of 10 women choose to parent. We do have adoption partners. Nightlight is an adoption partner of ours. We have 4 others, I think. So sometimes women will make adoption plans right, at our center. We don't get involved, but they do. Our centers have not experienced violence. Now, when the decision was leaked, I mean, people are generally chicken. You know, we get nasty phone calls and emails and things like that. It doesn't make any sense to me because we're not in the political realm. We're just trying to help. But there have been a number of centers that have been burned, where there's a number that have been burned down or graffitied or just not ours at this point.
Well, thank you.
There we go. Okay, well, thanks. Let's thank Brian for coming. It's awesome to have an in-person speaker. Okay, so DGL is here with the discussion questions, so we've got a good chunk of time to discuss, and then we will be posting this his talk online, so you guys will be able to hear it again. So thanks, Brian.
All right.